This talk was given by Bear Gokhan Bonabacher at the Zen Center of New York City. Gokhan is a senior monastic in the Mountains and Rivers Order. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about the temple's retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org/ZCNYC. Thanks for listening.
I'm going to start with this. This is Thich Nhat Hanh telling a story from the Mahaparinirvana Sutra, which is the last teaching of the Buddha, the last days of the Buddha, of his life. It says, when the Buddha was 80 years old and about to pass away, a young man named Subhadda came to see him. Ananda, the Buddha's attendant, thought it would be too exhausting for his master to see anyone. But the Buddha overheard Subhadda's request and said, Ananda, please invite him in. Even as he was dying, the Buddha was willing to give an interview. Subhadda asked, world-honored one, are the other religious teachers in Magadha and Kosala fully enlightened? And in the sutra, it explains that this was an important question for him. He was like, who do I follow? I don't know. They all say they're enlightened. Who do I follow? But the Buddha, hearing this, he knew he had only a short time to live and that answering such a question would be a waste of precious moments. When you have the opportunity to ask a teacher about the Dharma, ask a question that can change your life. So the Buddha replied, Subhadda, it is not important whether they are fully enlightened. The question is whether you want to liberate yourself. If you do, practice the Noble Eightfold Path. Wherever the Noble Eightfold Path is practiced, joy, peace, and insight are there. The Buddha offered the Eightfold Path in his first Dharma talk. He continued to teach the Eightfold Path for 45 years, and in his last talk, spoken to Subhadda, he offered the Noble Eightfold Path. And so that path is right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. The Eightfold Path is sometimes divided into what's referred to as the threefold training of morality, or the precepts, which includes the steps of right action, right speech, right livelihood, concentration, samadhi. So for us, particularly practice of zazen. And so this includes the steps of right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration. And the third section of insight or wisdom, prajna is the Sanskrit term. And so this includes right understanding and right intention, sometimes described or translated as right thought. And so this division of the path into these three parts, which aren't really parts, they work together. But it's a helpful way to look at practice, at our practice. Helpful way to understand what is practice. How do we know when we're practicing and when we're not? How do we know when we're practicing according to the Dharma and when we're not? How do we allow practice and freedom, liberation, to permeate, pervade, be in our life? And so I thought I'd use this division to talk about practice. I realized as I was sitting this morning, I think that I've done this before, but it will be a different talk, I'm sure, because I can't really remember the other one. And I also, as I've been last week I was on vacation, and so I did had a chance to do more reading than I usually do, and read a novel called The Overstory, which is about trees and humans and the relationship between trees and humans. Between trees and trees, and humans and humans. And it opens with a person sitting under a tree and the tree speaking. And at the end of what the tree says, it ends with simply, listen, there's something you need to hear. And so that's kind of been in me the last week or so, and as I was working on this talk, and so I want it feels like that speaks to practice, that is practice. Listen, there's something you need to hear. I've been thinking about how we have to find our own way in practice. Each of us have to find our own way in practice. Learn for ourselves what practice is, how to practice, and that the path is just continually studying that, learning that, seeing that for ourselves, deepening on our understanding of that. We have to find our own way through our own direct experience. What is letting go? What is concentration? Samadhi. We're given instruction in Zazen, so a number of you are here for the first time this morning, maybe first hearing this instruction for the first time, this simple instruction. Hold your body upright. Let it be relaxed. Bring all of your awareness to your breath. Notice when you get distracted. Let go of thoughts. And come back. Start over again with your breath. See the thoughts. Start over again with your breath. There's a way in which that's all we need, right? Just that instruction. But we have to learn for ourselves through our own practice, through our own experience. Well, what does that mean? What is it to see a thought? What is it to let go of a thought? What is concentration? A Chinese master, Ta Hui, many centuries ago, said, it's like drinking a glass of water and knowing for yourself whether it is hot or cold. We can talk about drinking water. We can talk about hot and cold. But only you can know directly. Only you can know truly. Nobody else. And concentration is so important. It's so emphasized in practice because it allows us to see. Stilling the turbulence of our mind, allowing the mind to settle, to return to its natural state of clarity. So it's often described in the teachings as like, you know, it's like you have a muddy pool. You stir up the mud in a pool of water and then letting it settle so that it's clear again, so you can see through. A concentrated, clear mind allows us to see clearly, allows us to experience the experiences of our life, to experience our life directly, more directly, to have direct experience. And so what is direct experience? This is what Ta Hui is talking about. It's very simple, drinking a glass of water and knowing for yourself whether it's hot or cold. Not thinking about it, not comparing, not talking about it, just knowing for yourself. The Korean master Sung San, who taught here in the United States extensively, says that direct experience is always true. It is what is true. Listen. There's something that you need to hear. Just you. It is this direct experience that is transformative, that changes, that shifts, it is what is trustworthy. And this too, we have to learn for ourselves, verify for ourselves. And so in working with concentration, we also should know that we don't know how much we can concentrate. We never know that. So we say sensei said that some time ago and it stuck with me. We never know how deep that can go. Remember that. So we have to find our own way in practice. And we have to find our own way in practice partly because we're all different. We have the same human mind, the same nature, and we have different experiences, different personalities, different history and karma, different habits of mind. And so some things are going to be skillful for some of us, helpful for some of us, that might not be so helpful for others, might not be skillful. This is why upaya, skillful means, exists and is so important. To know, find, what is the correct medicine? What is helpful? And so in the Eightfold Path, this is the right, right? So right speech, right effort, right intention. That's what is, that right is not as in right and wrong, the way we usually think of it, but what is skillful? What is helpful? Right? What is sort of the correct measure? And so in concentration, we have to find that. What is helpful? What is the correct effort? Often that's looser or tighter. Do we push? Push harder? Or relax? Do we need to be more gentle? Some of us need to loosen up. Right? I need to loosen up. It took me a long time to see that for myself. To see what I was doing to myself in the way that I was working with my thoughts, working with my mind in Zazen. How much I was fighting myself. And it took me a long time to see that I was never going to win that fight. And I got so tight in my Zazen, I would just, as soon as I sat down to do a period of Zazen, my heart would start pounding and my breath would get all kind of tight and constricted. It went on for some time, and I remember when I was working with Daito Roshi, I think he didn't really know what to do with me with this. And there was during one week-long session, I went in to Doksan, and he said, you know, why don't you just make your practice spacing out? I just don't pay attention to anything, to try and help me to relax that. And that was a difficult practice. And some of us need discipline. Hojin Sensei talks about how when she first started sitting, she was like so wiggly. She needed to be a place where there was no wiggling, right? Stop wiggling. That was the medicine that she needed. And really, as I was thinking about this, I think we all need both. Maybe at different times. And we have to find for ourselves, well, what is it to relax, to be gentle in this upright, disciplined practice? Right? It's like I needed the discipline to see that I needed to relax. I think that they're not actually in conflict when we can learn what's the right amount for us. There's a famous teaching where the Buddha is speaking to a musician, and the musician is asking about effort. And so he asked the musician, well, when you tune your lute, I think it was, how do you tune the strings? Right? And what he's eliciting is if they're too loose, there's no sound, nothing happens. Right? If we're too loose, nothing happens. So if we're just sitting and daydreaming or sleeping, nothing happens. And if we're too tight, if the strings of the lute are too tight, they don't sound good. Or maybe they break, right? Or discordant. And so if we're too tight, that's not what we need either. And so in finding our own way, this doesn't mean just making it up for ourselves, right? There's a path. There's a path that has been compassionately laid out for us, tested for us, proven for us. So how do we practice according to the Dharma and find our own way in that path? And so concentration is so important, calming the mind, letting the mind settle so that we can actually see what's happening in the mind, in our mind. Listen, there's something you need to hear. How rare and precious this is, just sitting in silence, stillness. And so there is in Zen this primary practice of Zazen, of turning inside, turning the light around, Dogen says. And it's just one part of practice. And so we practice concentration on the cushion in the Zendo. And hopefully off of the cushion, out of the Zendo. And in a way, it's the same practice. Where is your mind? So right now, where is your mind? Walking down the street, where is your mind? In conversation with a friend, where is your mind? And in this letting our practice come off of the cushion, we can let ourselves be tested by life, by what we experience. See, is our practice working? Is it coming with us? And this is where we can start to encounter the precepts. The precepts are the teachings of on morality, of compassion, harmony, the practice of maintaining and finding harmony, this is our practice manifesting in a sense. And so again, are we actually practicing? Am I actually practicing? How do we know if we're actually practicing rather than thinking about it, imagining that we're practicing? And so if we're paying attention, again, life can help show us this. Are we struggling less? Is there less struggle? Are we more in harmony? And so working with the precepts is an external practice in a sense, right? So it's us in relationship with others, with the world, guiding us in how we relate, seeing the effect of our speech and our actions on others, learning to adjust that, our speech, our actions, so that they're more in harmony, learning to refrain so that we can be in harmony. And this sort of external turning, looking, listening to the outside shows us what's happening in our mind. I just interrupted her, told her how to do that. She didn't ask me. Noticing that, listening to that, there's something I need to hear. Whether she says anything or not, noticing that, listening. She's telling me something. And turning inward, what, why? What is this habit? Do I need to assert myself? Be in control? Make myself feel better? So notice what's happening outside, a subtle reaction, and what's inside, what's happening in me, in my mind, what am I feeling? And we're practicing letting go, learning to let go. I'm practicing letting go. We are developing this spiritual power of letting go. And so how do we use that? So next time, don't say anything and see what happens. Let that impulse that I have to express my opinion, let that pass. See what happens. Or maybe, can I let the arrogant part of that pass, that kind of uncomfortable part of it pass, and they then say something? Is there a way to offer help that is in accord, that allows us both to be whole? So one of the precepts is to see the perfection, do not elevate the self and blame others. And in the teachings on the precepts, I think this is, I was seeing this week in Master Sung San talking about the precepts, but often they're teachings about regret, noticing regret, letting regret speak to us, listening to regret, around practicing the precepts. And You know, I think that we sometimes experience regret or guilt or shame, and it's not a healthy thing, right? And so this is, in the teachings, kind of a different speaking about regret, that it's a healthy thing because it is noticing our desire, our caring. It's noticing our caring, right? Our wanting to not cause disharmony, to not cause pain. And it's healthy because we can learn from that regret. That's listening, right? We need to hear something so that we can change our ways, change our mind. I was having a conversation with someone a while back at the monastery, and she was speaking about, we were just talking about practice and sort of her experience of practice. And she was speaking about, she was Catholic, and that she was speaking about how she, in her Catholic community, her meditation practice was not really accepted. And I had recently been talking to someone else about that, a friend who's a minister, practices, who somewhat regularly invites me to she does a lot of work in the county jail, and she invites me to go with her and teach meditation. And so in talking to this woman at the monastery, I was, I said that, and I led off by saying that I go to the county jail, and I could see her sort of, that wasn't pertinent to the conversation. And I just noticed that, and this sort of stuck with me, and was reflecting on it. Well, why did I say that? Why did I speak about going to the jail? That wasn't actually the part of the conversation. It was what my friend was talking to me about. So my minister friend, who I go to the jail with, she had been saying, well, her spiritual advisor, her sort of spiritual teacher, also questions her meditation practice. She's quite a serious meditator. And it kind of took a while for this to bubble up, but I realized I think that I said that because the woman I was talking to was a person of color. I was making a racist connection in that conversation that I couldn't really see at the time. I couldn't see why I was saying this. I couldn't hear it. So I've been noticing that, noticing these quiet thoughts that bubble up around race that I don't think that I could hear before, or I haven't been listening to. And I was thinking about my experience in practice of working with self-critical thoughts, the years of practice where I couldn't hear what I was saying to myself. I wasn't able to, I knew that I was in pain, and I couldn't connect that with, I didn't know where that was coming from. And it took a lot of sitting, a lot of looking, a lot of listening to be able to hear what I was saying to myself, the constant criticism, and then to see how that was creating pain, suffering. And it was the starting to hear what I was saying that was the turning point. And I could work with it. I could hear what I said about other people. It took longer to hear what I was saying about myself. And so this conversation at the monastery that I had reflecting on that, I couldn't quite hear that. I can't quite hear these quiet thoughts about race, remembering things that I was taught explicitly and not so and quietly about race. So again, listen. There's something I need to hear. Because our thoughts have an effect. So it may be just a subtle reaction in a conversation. Easy to miss. It's easy to miss how our thoughts have an effect on other people. It's easy to miss how our thoughts have an effect on us. And so, what are our thoughts doing to us? What are they doing to others? How are our thoughts binding us? Whatever our thoughts are. And so, to listen to regret, to this discomfort, what is it coming from? What is it pointing to? And to really pay attention, it's a subtle thing to not turn this regret into shame, guilt, not turn it on ourselves. Right? That's not helpful to anyone. And so really to pay attention to that, how do we stop the fighting inside? I was talking to someone earlier this week who was talking about how he saw that he was kind of killing his thoughts. seeing that that was his understanding of letting go. And so to appreciate the precepts internally, right? How do we treat ourselves, right? That so important precept, affirm life, do not kill, right? To practice that internally as well. And really to pay attention, are we being skillful in our zazen, in our interior practice, right? That's what the precepts are pointing to. Are we acting in a way that is helpful, that is liberating, or not? And so Master Sung San, again, on the precepts, he speaks of them as allowing us to see clearly, right? Which is the same thing that he says about wisdom. This is wisdom, seeing clearly. That seeing things as they are, the precepts help us to do that. The precepts help to release us from the push-pull of like and dislike, constant judgment. We can't see clearly when we're caught in that. So the precepts help the waters to settle, to be clear again. So the Buddha asked Subhadra whether he wanted to liberate himself. He taught a path of liberation, a path that is right here, that leads us to right here. Where else could it be? It's the only place that practice can happen, that liberation can happen. Always right here. And in a sense, the precepts remind us of this. So liberation is not liberation if it only happens in the quiet of our zazen. That's not yet liberation. And so, what about this wisdom that is held up? Sung San says it's just direct experience. It's just right here. It's just right now. He says the universe is always teaching us truth at every moment. It is always giving us a wonderful Dharma speech. So again, listen. There's something you need to hear. Wisdom is simply seeing things as they are, seeing things in their true nature. And there's a way in which this is very ordinary. And I think that's, you know, there's a skillfulness in the teachings where everything is extraordinary. And it's very ordinary. And that is really helpful to remember that, to remember that even if you came here today for the first time, sitting as soon as you sit down and engage zazen, you are starting to see clearly, to have direct experience. I mean, you don't have to be doing zazen to have direct experience, but to know that it is that very direct, ordinary, just seeing. So how is that transformative? How is that liberating? To notice when we can notice, oh, I'm not struggling so much with that. To realize that we've let go of something. To know that that comes from seeing clearly and letting go. And just as with concentration, to know that we have no idea how deep that can go. To keep looking, keep listening, keep verifying. And I guess I just wanted to end, you know, this. So this line at the beginning of this book, listen, there's something you need to hear. Of course, a lot of the book was about that what we need to hear from the trees is that they're dying, right? That are killing them. And the sort of overwhelmingness of that. And you can turn in that direction. You can turn to poverty and war and the history and reality presently of racism in our country. And they're all overwhelming. It's like, what about the things that we don't want to hear? That we don't want to listen to? Because they're overwhelming. And I was remembering, and this is sort of my response, I guess, I was remembering many years ago, I taught teaching high school in the Bronx. I was a brand new teacher. I got like transferred in the middle of the year, sent to this big chaotic school, violent school, metal detectors, fights in my classroom. And I would go up to Sesshin, up to the monastery to do Sesshin, and then come back Monday, back into the classroom. And having done Sesshin, having been in silence and sitting, I would be open to the pain and like feel the pain that was around me swirling through the school, and realize that at the same time that practice had opened me to that, that I was able to listen, able to hear, able to kind of hold my footing because of practice. And so we need to listen. We need to respond, even when it's kind of don't want to. Right? But there's nowhere else to go. And that's okay. It's okay. That's just the fullness, the wholeness of our life. So let us listen. There are things that we need to hear.
Thanks so much for listening. To find out more about the monastery's programs, weekend retreats, and residency, please visit our website at cmm.org.